Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Yeah, it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
Welcome to News for the Soul's 20th anniversary broadcast series. News for the Soul, the longest running spiritual empowerment and exploration broadcast in North America, started its 21st year in January 2018, and we're just getting warmed up. It's time to take it to the next level, exploring the edge of human consciousness and possibility on planet Earth in our 21st year with founder and journalist Nicole Marie Whitney at the helm. What's really real and what's really possible? That is what we want to know. So if you're ready to find out together, get ready for life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Platinum Edition. Here is News for the Soul.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show. And we are live. I get to introduce you to a new member of the News for the Soul family in this hour, this next show, Alma Pura, Awakening. Apparently, Alma Pura means pure soul. And Nikki is going to be telling us all about that as we get to know her. We're going to start at the beginning and bring her on. Welcome, Nikki, to News for the Soul.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
So first thing I have to ask you is, how do you pronounce your last name?
Oh, my last name is Chicoteca.
Oh, I wasn't even close. I was trying a few ways before going on the air. So glad I just asked. All right.
Yeah, that's a hard one to say.
Wow. Yeah, a lot of consonants in there. Anyways, here we are. Right at the beginning of the beginning, we're going to get to know you and your story, how you came to be doing what you do, and what your big piece that you're bringing to the big picture is. So we're going to start where we start, the place that connects us all on News for the Soul. Our quest for really what's really real and what's really possible. So we all at some point have had these direct experiences with something outside the 3D norm that kind of changes our path and awakens us to other things. So I'm curious what your earliest incidents might have been and also your most profound.
Okay, my earliest incident was probably when I was about 4 years old. And I know it was toward the end of the summertime, and I was very afraid of thunderstorms. And my bedroom was in the back of the house, so it was like the bedroom and then the kitchen and then the living room and then the long hallway and then my parents' room. So this was a night that we had a really, really bad thunderstorm, and I remember like a crack of thunder really scaring the crap out of me. So I woke up and I ran into my mom's room. And when I went to my mom's room, I just wanted her to let me lay down with her because I was afraid. And she told me there was nothing to be afraid of and to go back to my bedroom. So I walked back to my bedroom. And when I walked into my bedroom, there was a woman sitting on my bed. And the thing that interested me is that she was like above my bed. So she was like this angel-looking, kind of Dominican-looking, African-looking, I guess, lady, and she was sitting above my bed. So I could see between her and the bed, I could see my dresser, like she was elevated. And so that kind of fascinated me, and she told me that she was like my angel, like my guardian angel. Her name was Francesca. She was about 32 years old. And she told me that I didn't have anything to be afraid of. And I was more fascinated with how she could sit above my bed instead of on my bed, that I completely forgot about the thunderstorm. And then that same guardian angel has been with me my whole life, only she's never aged. But I've aged, and now I'm older than her. But wow. She's been a consistent part of my spiritual growth since I was a little girl. When I was a little girl, I would see her a lot, and she would take me places. I didn't understand it at the time, but now I understand it to be like my soul went with her soul to experience different realms and things like that. But I wasn't aware that that's what was happening. I just thought I was going on a little trip with my friend. So that's my earliest experience. I think my most profound experience was in making that connection with my guardian angel. Shortly after that, I started to see like family and friends that were in heaven that I didn't know who they were. But if I told my grandmother about what I would see, then she could tell me like who I was talking to. And so where it really predominantly started for me was connecting with people in heaven and having the confirmation from my grandmother about who those people were that I was talking to. And my grandmother was a medium, a spiritualist, and so she helped me really when I was a little girl to kind of understand what types of questions to ask and how to tell if they're from positive life source, like from God, or if they're not and if they're faking you out. And so she was a really big part of my guidance until I was the age of 14 when she became ill. And so for the majority of time, it was just really focused in my family. You know, I wasn't outside doing this. I wasn't telling the neighbors really so much about this. It was just like within the family that I could see people in heaven and communicate with them. My older sister was very much like that also, but I think she got scared of it the older she got. So it kind of was something that she pushed off to the side a little bit. But it really fascinated me. And so that's really where my focus was at that time in my younger years. And then I was in the military when it became very predominant for me, and people in the military started to recognize that I was the Marine that talked to dead people. So people would kind of come and knock on my barracks door, or they would ask me if I could connect with their friends and family in heaven. And meanwhile, I never understood how this whole process worked. You know, if somebody came over to my barracks and they wanted me to communicate with, let's say, their grandmother who passed away, I would have to sit there for like hours and just kind of wait. And we would play cards and they would be like, well, is my grandma coming? I'm like, I don't know, I guess whenever she wants. I didn't know about a style of communication with the other side. I just knew that they started talking to me and I just repeated what they said. But it wasn't very interactive. It was more they told me stuff, I told the people told me if it was an accurate translation or connection with their loved one in heaven, but I could never initiate that connection. So my mom died shortly after I joined the military. So about 2 years into my time in the military, my mom passed away. And I had been connecting with people in heaven in the military and, you know, amongst my friends and family, and people that I would do that for would tell me, oh my gosh, you have such a gift, Nikki. Oh my gosh, what a gift you have. And so me and my faith base, which is Catholicism, we were Catholic in my family. And so in my understanding of God, I didn't really think that if I had a gift, that means if other people thought that I had a gift, that means that they didn't have that gift. And that's why they considered what I did to be a gift. So I believed that, and I really thought that that was true. But then when my mom died, I had a human understanding that God is fair. He's fair. And even if he gave me a gift, whatever that gift is that he gave me, he was still fair. So I thought that if other people had to come and see me so I could talk to their family, then in order for me to talk to my mom, I would have to go elsewhere because God wouldn't let me talk to my mom, but wouldn't let you talk to your mom. Like, that's not fair. And if we believe him to be our father, and we, if by chance we have children, we know that we wouldn't afford one opportunity to a child and neglect that same offering to another child. That just doesn't make logical sense. So if it's not making logical sense, I'm thinking, well, I probably won't be able to talk to my mom. I'm going to have to figure out who can do this. And I didn't even realize at that time that there was a spiritual community. Like, I didn't know that there were places that you could actually go and have this done, or that there was anything like tarot or mediumship. Like, I didn't understand that. I was just talking to people in heaven that were connected to my family and my friends. I didn't know about communities or gatherings. I didn't read any books or anything like that. It was just my own logic that thought, if you can't talk to your mom, I'm probably not going to be able to talk to my mom either. So I really didn't look for that connection with my mom. So then about a couple years after my mom died, I was doing a session with a lady, and her mom connected. And her mom, many times in heaven, when the people in heaven communicate with us, the real understanding of mediumship is not the fact that you believe that that spirit in heaven is communicating with you from an egoic human or egoic, like human physical perspective. That spirit is not talking to your body. So me, humanly, Nikki, I'm not talking to that person's relative. The one that is talking to that person's relative is my soul. And my soul does that communication. It's a soul-to-soul connection. So my soul talks to their soul. Their soul tells my soul stuff. My soul's responsibility is to relay that information to me so I can then in turn relay it to their family member that I have a matching existence to body, human to human. Soul to soul happens soul to soul. Body to body happens body to body. So I have to depend on the relationship that I share with my own soul in order to communicate with your friends and family, which means I better be best friends with my soul or I'm not going to get any information. And so in that recognition, many times the people in heaven will tell your soul a piece of information, and then your soul has to kind of dig through your entire life and find a vision, a memory, a picture, or something like that to make you say what they want you to say. So many times they will use my own life reference to have me have an understanding of that so I can relay that piece of information. So on this day that I was having this session with this woman, she wanted to talk to her mom, and so we waited, and her mom came. And the information that my soul told me was that the woman passed away of cancer, and the thing that really kind of bothered her was that her wig, you know, she didn't like losing her hair. She also said something about the initials of VW. She said something about the month of July and October. And so I'm relaying all this information to the woman, and she keeps telling me I'm wrong. Like, she's like, no, that's not true. And I'm like, well, I kind of believe the people in heaven, and they're sharing this information with me. And she's like, no, that's not anything to do with my mom. And I'm thinking, well, who the heck am I talking to then? And then I heard a laughter. And the laughter that I heard was my mother's laughter. And then in one swoop vision, like a sense of knowing all at one time, the whole entire session that I had with that woman in front of me up until that point replayed in my brain. My father's name is Vernon William. My mother's birthday's in July. Mine is in October. My mother passed away of cancer. It's her who didn't like the wig. And I realized that during that whole previous point in the session, I was talking to my own mother, which blew my mind into a bazillion pieces. That's what put me on my quest. Wow. Because I thought, how the heck did that just happen? So then I went on this self-discovery that I needed to figure out. How do they talk to me? How do I talk to them? How is that possible? How is this happening? It was just happening, but I didn't have an explanation for it. And my life at the time was really difficult. Now, this is several years later. I'm out of the military. I'm working at IBM. I'm a computer programmer, and I have this awakening experience in 1998. And that experience, literally, this is my most profound experience. That experience was like, I call it my spiritual awakening, because every question I had asked about my life, my existence, what's happening, how it's happening, why am I like this, why are people like this, why do people treat me this way, why, all of those questions that I had asked in the course of my entire life, including how do people in heaven talk to people on earth. There was a 4-minute window where I had this experience that answered every single one of those questions. And
wow.
It separated my brain into 3 different pieces. So there was an observer, one who recognized the interaction between the body and the soul. So we're 3. We are 3. Genesis 26 says that we're created in the image of God. So if we come from a Christian perspective, then we believe in the Holy Trinity, which divides us into 3. Sigmund Freud says we're the id, the ego, and the superego, 3. Spiritual people say we're mind, we're body, we're soul. Psychological people say we're analytical, physical, and emotional. Everywhere we look, we are divided into 3. So the Trinity isn't really a mystery. It's really what we are. So in that 4-minute experience that I had, I was witness to the interaction between the body and the soul, which is why I say, oh my gosh, they're not talking to me, Nikki. They're talking to like my spirit me, Nikki. And then my spirit me, Nikki, tells my human me, Nikki, what that interaction was. And I could see that in that awakening experience, because I became the observer to that duality, that interaction, which to me looked like a friendship, which then brought me to the relationship between God and Jesus, the physical, the spiritual. The observer there would be the Holy Spirit, to see the interaction between the two. So that would be my most profound experience.
You know, it makes sense the way you describe it that way. I don't think I've heard anyone else describe it in that way. So it makes sense. But what precipitated that 4-minute window? What happened to make that open?
Well, I think that we go through experiences in our life to try to reach a balance. And so we put so much effort into the way we treat others, the career that we have, the home that we have, the relationships that we foster, that we almost do that from a sacrificial perspective. You know, we're up all night with the kids, or we're studying so hard, or we're putting so much of ourselves into the world that is external to us. It's how we justify our sense of self. It's how we create ourselves to be. And so after putting years and years of effort into a career or a relationship, a friendship, a parent-child relationship, a sibling, brother, sister, mother, father, when you just give everything that you are, because everything that you give is supposed to define who you are. Everybody knows I'm a nice person. Everybody knows I'll get up at 2:00 in the morning and give you a ride. Everybody knows if you come to my house, I'm going to feed you. So we do for the external world. We do for the external world because we're looking for a self-identification. And in that giving, in that focus, in that energy, we look for a response from all of those people, our bosses, our sisters, our brothers, our parents, our children, We look for a response of validation. We look for the external world to say, hey, you made it. You are a good person. And if you fall down, I'm going to rush and pick you up because you always rush and pick me up. But then the world doesn't rush and pick you up. And you find yourself on your knees crashing. And you sit on the couch at the end of the day and you go, holy crap, all the shit I do for people and not one person can step forward for me and do for me what I do for them because don't they see I'm tired? So you start to ask yourself, what did I do wrong? Let me try this. Let me try that. Let me try to talk to my husband this way. Let me try to tell my girlfriend this. Let me try to see if they'll respond the way I need them to because I'm really exhausting myself trying to find my identification outside of myself by doing all this crap for people who don't even give a damn. So I broke down. And I got to a point where I call it like a dehumanized state where the quality of my human existence, it sucked. If you look at it from the outside world, it looked great. I had a nice husband and beautiful children. I had a career as a software engineer. I was a Marine. I mean, everything looked really beautiful. But what happened that I didn't feel the way it looked on the outside? So I became sad, and I threw up my hands one day, and I said, you know what, God, I don't care. Well, I don't know. I don't know what the heck is wrong with me. I don't know why. So I prayed for 3 years from 1995. To 1998, every day, on the way to work, on the way home from work. And sometimes it was formal prayer, like the Our Fathers, the Hail Marys, the chants, the meditations. And sometimes it was just a conversation like, hey, any help here would be freaking great. Anything you want to like shed light on for me, enlighten me on, please. Because I was frustrated. And when we come to a point of breaking, we throw up our hands and we just let it go because we can't fix it. And that's what prompted this experience. So I think it was because I no longer felt like I had dominance within my humanity, that my humanity tried everything. I tried to be the nice person. I tried. But it didn't matter what I tried. It didn't matter how I tried. It didn't matter what plan I did. It just, the world wasn't doing what it was supposed to do. It wasn't giving back the effort I was putting in, and I couldn't figure it out because I was just trying to be a good person. And so I think that when we hit a point of dehumanization and our humanity is no longer the dominant factor of our existence, and we start looking for a sign, you know, that's when we're like, hey, any signs? And I think that that in that state of not having physical control or dominance in my egoic development, the only thing left was for my soul to be the more dominant part of my existence. We share space in this body. And most of the time, the part of us that is dominant is the conditioned self, the physical self. Our goal is to share a space that is a friendship and not a submissive and a dominant. It doesn't work. Then we're playing teeter-totter too much with ourselves and with others. So when my soul took a dominance that day, that's what prompted it, is because there was a relinquishment per se, a surrender of human control. Mm. And in that surrender, even though it was a forced surrender, in that control, in that loss of control is where you get all of your answers, because you're counting on something else, which turns into faith, which says there's something bigger than me. And that bigger than me can be boiled down to such a simple example as you are laying on the couch watching TV and your whole human brain is totally focused on the TV show. That's all you're thinking about when all of a sudden do your laundry pops into your head. And you're like, oh, no, I'll just do it tomorrow. And then tomorrow you wake up, realize you need that pair of jeans, and you have a memory pop into your head of laying on the couch last night when you told yourself to do the laundry, and then you even say it, oh, my God, I wish I would have listened to myself when I told myself to do the laundry. What self told you to do the laundry? You were watching TV. Yourself was watching TV. So what self told you to do the laundry? Why didn't you listen? Why do you regret not listening? Our soul talks to us all day. It's a matter of, do we hear it? Do we catch it? Can we define the three different voices in our brain?
What else did you learn in those 4 minutes?
That is still undetermined, because what we know in the presence of our soul is very difficult to translate into words. In other words, I don't know what I know, but whatever you want to know, we can ask. And we'll get the answer. So I learned, my main thing that I learned was the construction of our humanity. And after this experience occurred, I went to my pastor at my church, told him what happened, because I was trying to figure out what the heck happened to me. What the heck happened to me? I got three voices in my head. It's kind of similar to when I talk to people in heaven, but not really. It's kind of different, but it's kind of the same. And I'm thinking, my family thinks I'm psychotic. They've thought I've been crazy since I was like 6 years old. They think I'm nuts. I don't even speak to my family. They won't even speak to me. So when this happened, I was like, did I have a breakdown? Like, am I crazy? Like, did I have a stroke? Like, what's happening in my brain? Every opinion, there's two perspectives. And then I know there's two perspectives because I'm witnessing two perspectives. I can see my human self thinking this. I can see my spirit self thinking this. Then who the heck is watching me do that? Mm-hmm. So it kind of made me feel a little bit crazy. So I went to my pastor and I told him what happened. And he very slightly picked me up by the bottom of my elbow and asked me to leave the church.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Hard.
So I left, and I thought, okay, well, I obviously either need a psychiatrist or like a self-help book. So I went to the Barnes & Noble to look for like some self-help books or like some religious books. Now, remember, I didn't know there was a community. I didn't know like I could walk into some holistic shop. I didn't even know holistic shops existed. So I didn't know about any of that. I didn't know about a chakra. I didn't know about any energy or anything. I was just talking to people in heaven, and this weird thing happened to me, and I'm trying to figure out what the heck happened to me because I'm not thinking correctly. I am in a full-view argument between my soul and my body, even as simple as go to the grocery store and get milk for the kids. Ridiculous.
Mm.
So when I went to the church, I thought that maybe they could explain to me if this sounded like a spiritual awakening or if I just went like crazy. And he obviously thought I think he thought I went crazy. So he was like, bye bye. So I left and I went to Schaumburg. I'm like about 45 minutes away from the town that where the Barnes and Noble was. So I went to the Barnes and Noble. First thing I did was I went to like all these self-help books, you know, and I pick up a book, and when I pick up the book, my hands started burning so bad, like getting itchy and feeling like I burned them like on a hot pan. So I took that kind of like a sign, like, okay, obviously that's not the book. So I would put the book back. I did that with about 60 books over the course of 2 hours. And every damn book that I picked up, whether it was religion, self-help, meditation, Buddhism, it didn't matter what it was. My hands hurt. So I was like, at that point, I'm like, okay, I obviously like had a stroke or I had like a nervous breakdown. Like maybe this isn't an awakening at all. maybe I'm just crazy. So I get in the car, I'm driving home, and I get this flash in my head, 2 Corinthians. And so I was like, oh, okay, you want me to look at Corinthians. So I go and I get home and I pull out the Bible and I look up the verse. And the verse that popped into my head, which I didn't know because at the time I didn't read the Bible. I mean, I'm Catholic, but it's not like Catholics really focus on the Bible when they're talking or teaching. It's just stories here and there. So it's in 1 Corinthians 2:5 is what had popped into my head. So that verse says that your faith should not be in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. And that kind of, like, that's like my motto. It's like literally on the back of my business card. This is way before I had business cards too. But that's the thing that's the verse that popped into my head. And when I got home and I opened it and I read it, I kind of took it like, so, A, I took it like a huge sign, like you're not crazy, like something spiritual happened to you, Nikki. And then when I read the verse, that your faith should not be in the wisdom of men, meaning, honey, you're not going to find your answers at the church. You're not going to find your answers from the pastor. You're not going to find your answers from a psychologist. And you are not going to find your answer from any of those 60 or 70 books that you tried to get a grasp on what the heck happened to you. So it better be by the power of God that you understand what the heck happened to you, because you obviously ain't going to find it in a book. And I kept, and what happened is after I read this verse, I kept reading. It kind of blew my mind, so I got sucked in. Like if you open a book and you start reading a good book and you get sucked into the book. Well, I got sucked into Corinthians. And I was sitting there for a little while, and I felt like, you know, and when you're a little kid and, you know, your brother or your sister walks past and they smack you in the back of the head, like, duh, like that. Well, I felt that when I had been sucked into reading Corinthians so much that I didn't realize I got sucked into reading it. When I felt this like slap on the back of the head, and I don't know if that was my spirit, if that was my grandma, I like don't know who that was, but I felt it. And the question that came to me was, how are your hands? And they weren't burning and they weren't itchy and they didn't hurt. So I took that to mean that all the education I needed was in the book that was in my hands, which was the Holy Bible. So I started to read the New Testament, and I started to realize that when I was reading it, a lot of the questions that I had about what the heck happened to me in that spiritual awakening, how did God talk to Jesus? You know, he goes up on some mountain to talk to God, and God is him and he is God and they're one and the same, but they can talk to each other. One of them's physical, one of them's spiritual. They're both equally God. They're both super important. So how, if they're one thing, how did they differ in opinion? How did Jesus say, hey, I don't want to die on the cross, but God, who happens to be me, but like a spirit me is telling me I have to go do it, so I'm going to go do it. So that means that God and Jesus disagree. And that's what was happening in my brain after this awakening. My human self is like, go to the store. My spiritual self is like, don't. But I went and I had a car accident. And I'm like, oh, that's why my spirit self said, don't go. So I was having this battle in my own brain. Then when I started reading the New Testament, I was like, oh, that totally is happening to me right now. He comes down off that mountain. People are probably thinking he's crazy. What does he mean he hears a voice in his head? How did he hear a voice in his head? Because that's what I'm trying to figure out for myself. To find commonality with Jesus' struggle in hearing and believing in something that cannot be seen, but that is you, but that guides you, but that gives you equal importance. And that's how this all began. So in hearing that voice, it said, why don't you write down what happened to you? So my Nikki self said, okay, sure, spirit self, I'll write it down. And I wrote it down. And it was 175 pages. And I didn't know why my soul wanted me to write it down, but I wrote it down. About a year and a half. And then I had all these lessons, human lessons, that when I would come upon these situations or experiences, conversations, good things, bad things, I would get these flashes of that awakening and a sense of knowing that what I'm looking at in this situation from a physical perspective looks like this, but from the spirit perspective it looks like this, but then from the observer perspective it looks a little different. So then my goal became, as the observer, hey, that human part and that spirit part, dude, they have to be friends. It's not going to work if they're not friends. They have to agree. If they agree, healing happens. Like, Jesus goes on a mountain and tells God, hey, I don't want to do that. God is like, hey, you totally have to do that. And Jesus is like, all right, I'll do it. But that makes God the boss, not Jesus. So that means what? We always have to listen to our spirit? Like, when does our spirit listen to us? Like, when did God do what Jesus wanted? And there's a wedding at Cana. And, like, you know, they're at a wedding. And they want wine, but all they got is water. And Mary comes up to Jesus and is like, hey, we're at a wedding. We only have water. Can you go do your thing and, like, make wine? And Jesus is like, yeah, sure. So he goes off, talks to his higher self, God. It's like, you know, we're at a wedding. Total human request, right? Total human request. We want a drink at the wedding. And then all of a sudden there's wine coming out of these water jugs. So we're not looking at obedience from the soul to the body or the body to the soul. We're looking at a friendship. Like, they help each other out. And then, wow, when they agree, meaning they both want the same thing, a leper is healed, a blind man sees, a little girl is raised from the dead. All these miracles happen because the Father and the Son, the human and the spirit, are best friends, and they both want the same thing. They agree. They're not helping each other out. They're totally in agreement. That's our goal. That's our goal as human beings. Because in that state, you have the answer. So then my spirit told me about 2 years later, write it down again. So I wrote it all down again. It got down to 125 pages. Stripped out a bunch of stuff. Stripped out, what I started to notice was stripping out some of the personal stories and experiences, just kind of getting to the root of what that meant. And in this time, I started to ask people. I would be in, they would come to me to talk to their grandma in heaven. But grandma wouldn't come. But what would come were visions of my awakening. And I would tell them, I learned this thing when I had this thing happen to me. Do you have that thing? And they're like, oh my God, that blows my mind. I totally have that thing. So I started to recognize that the things that I had learned about my own self, I could very easily, based on the vision from my soul, tell that person about their self. And then I thought, wow, I came to all this after praying for like 3 years, but you shouldn't have to pray for this for 3 years. It's information that is available to us. It's information that we know about our own self. So I wrote it again. And then I was told to write it again. And then I was told to write it again. And then my friend said, I'll help you rewrite it. And then she helped me rewrite it. And that is my offering of Alma Pura, the beginning. So Alma Pura is what I kind of named my awakening. Because when I was talking to my daughter, she says, Mom, what did it do for you? I said, oh, honey, it like cleaned out my soul. It made me pure inside. It made me who I really am and not who I thought I was, who is really the same person. And so I'm Hispanic, and so alma pura means pure soul in Spanish. So Alma Pura is what happened to me during that experience. So that's what I've titled my business. There is a set of 5 workshops that come from that awakening experience, and those workshops are called Alma Pura, the beginning. There's many levels to Alma Pura, but the first 5 workshops to solidify that understanding, to be able to teach to people the discovery of their own human existence. Because if you don't recognize the conditioning of your human existence and why you are the way you are, then when you translate spirit, you are translating through the filter of conditioning. It is not free. It's not clear. Because whatever you perceive will come through your humanity. Your body is a vacant shell that gets filled up and gets a filter of conditioning based on your experiences in your life. So when God works through you, when your soul works through you, it is working through a filter. Your goal is to remove the filter. So you remove the filter by recognizing the conditioning of your humanity. So you have the ability to observe that which is conditioned and that which is not, which then helps you to identify the relationship, the friendship. And in that identification, you then become the observer. And in that observance, you can structure and manifest your life according to the truth, not passing through a filter. This is important, especially for people who are readers and people that are psychic per se or spiritual per se. Sometimes you could go see a reader and they're going to give you information and like 50% of it's right, 50% of it's wrong. Some things were true, some things weren't. When somebody translates, you know, the Bible very clearly says, do not seek the assistance of a spiritualist or a medium or a guesser, a divine, you know what I mean, like a seer. And I question that because I see, I communicate. So are you telling me not to do that? That's what my church said. That's what my faith taught me. But what is this really meaning here? Not to consult with people that do this work. And the only thing I could come up with that became very clear to me after my awakening is you are a conditioned human being. Therefore, you cloud the flow of energy through you based on your conditioning. And unless you can transcend that, like Christ did, a transcendence of humanity. Die before you die. Let go of your ego. Let go of your perceptions. Until you can do that, you cannot translate clearly another person's message. You will skew it based on your perception and your filter. So when you seek assistance like that, mediumship, spirituality, psychic, seers, the only things that you should accept are the things that reside truthfully in your soul. Because if it doesn't reside accurately and truthfully with you when you are in a session with somebody, that means that that information isn't for you. That's more about them than it is about you. Everything in a connection of spirit for you should match, should all make sense, should all feel accurate. When it doesn't, it's because your soul rebels against that information, which means that the person that you're connecting to at that moment is not connecting properly to your soul. The only limitation of that connection is the body, which is conditioned, which is taught. So we have to be, that's the instruction. That's what that means. It means trust your soul. So when you hear information of truth, you can recognize it. And that you don't think that the person who claims to be psychic, medium, or spiritualist sitting across the table from you may have more information than you, because they don't. They're just translating what you know for yourself inside that you can't put into words. That's all they're doing. The only way that a medium or a spiritualist can get any information is because it exists within you. They don't know anything until you walk in the room. They don't know anything until they reach out for your soul. They don't know anything until they connect with you. So it's really you that has the information. So when you're talking to somebody and they're telling you stuff, if that's from your soul, it'll feel right. You won't question it. It'll be accurate. It should be. So it's not the Bible telling you don't do it. It's saying pay attention to your soul because you already know the truth. And if your soul reacts in a way that doesn't accept that as truth, it means it's not true for you, no matter what the person in front of you is saying. And so that awakening experience, that first beginning part is Almapura. The beginning, the first workshop is state of being, which is a condition of your humanity. The second workshop is honor self, which is how do I honor myself within the condition of my humanity. The third workshop is trigger points, which teaches us how is my humanity triggered based on these first two parts. And if none of those three things work, we cover the fourth workshop, which is dehumanization. When you don't know your condition, when you're not listening to yourself, you're not honoring yourself, and you're triggered. So then we break, and then we talk about depression and dehumanization, disconnection from the self, and how to come out of that state and that experience, how we created ourselves, how we walk into it, how we come out of it, when it's warranted, when it's not, when it's self-created and manifested, or when you are just a participant in another's experience. And then we talk about process of love and how we love other people and how people need to be loved and how we choose to love. Even though we think we love really well, we love people the way we need to be loved, not the way they need to be loved. Because if we love them the way they need to be loved, they would never have to ask you for more or correct you on anything, or challenge you on if you care about them or not. But when we love people the way that we need to be loved, that's just a perk for them. It's not what they need. That's our gift to them. The way we need to be loved is our gift to them. But it doesn't solve the way they need to be loved. So in recognizing our own conditioning, and coming to grips with that, we very easily can tell how the people we love actually need to be loved. And that changes the nature of your experience, and you start to see heaven on earth. And then we talk about, and that's the first set. And I could go on and on because I teach many different workshops, but that's where I always suggest people to start there to develop that relationship between the body and the soul and to find that connection in a manner that allows an interactive connection. I'm going to ask my spirit a question. My spirit's going to answer me. I'm going to be in the middle of my day. My spirit's going to tell me to do something. I'm going to stop what I'm doing and I'm going to go do what my spirit told me. And so this first series of workshops enhances and identifies the distinction between the human self and the spirit self. And that puts us, and seriously, these understandings of my awakening came from reading the New Testament. Because that's the only book that didn't burn my hands. And in reading that, I could identify with, like, the apostles. I could identify with, like, the people in the synagogue. Like, I could find myself in all of these different scenarios, and it was the same questions I had. And then life just kind of happened, and it enhanced it, which was like, oh, that's why I'm like that. Okay, totally get it. Mm-hmm. Yep, I see that. And it made it okay that the book that I learned from and compared my experience to was the Bible. It was okay because then I could say I'm religious and I'm not crazy. And my whole family thinks I'm crazy, so to me, that was better. I would, you know what I mean? That was better. That was, I'm faithful. I'm spiritual. That feels better than I need to go seek some traditional therapy to get my head outside of three voices. Because if I take that information to a traditional therapist, they are going to think I am schizophrenic because I literally have three voices in my head. So finding that at some point when we transcend humanity, we're more of a witness than observer. And that is heaven on earth. Because then we can fully engage in that dual self becoming one with no filter. So if there's no filter and you can easily let your soul, which is connected to God, flow through your body easily through that filter, even if you recognize, like, oh, yep, that's my filter, but then it goes anyway because you already know about it, so it doesn't stop it. Then your life becomes heaven on earth, no matter what shit you're going through. Ooh, can you say shit on the radio? Anyway.
I think you can. We just did.
Okay, sorry. But you see what I mean? So that's kind of where I... So that's Omapura. I offer these talks. You know, it's called What I Have Learned from Spirit, once a month, where people come. And I never know what we're going to talk about. Like, I always have a plan. Like, we're going to talk about consciousness tonight. And then I get there, and somebody asks a question, and they ask a question that I, Nikki, have no idea what the answer is. But the minute that I surrender that part of my human existence, the answer comes. So I love those because I learn because you ask a question. You see what I mean? So it's kind of like, that's why when you said, what did I learn the most? I don't know yet because I don't know what to know, which makes me chuckle when I say that because a friend of mine, her dad, when he was going to pass away, he knew I was like this. And I said, hey, Leonard, when you get to heaven, will you come and check in with me and let me know you got there okay and everything? And he was like, yeah, Nikki, I will. And I was like, okay. So then he died and about, I don't know, 5 or 6 days passed and I felt him connect with me. And I was like, hi, Leonard. And he's like, hi. I said, what's it like there? And he goes, I don't know what to know first. And it really perplexed me. And so just now, as that little phrase just a minute ago kind of flew out of my mouth, I think my friend's dad, Leonard, is popping in here with that little saying. But that is how I feel. I can't answer your question fully because I don't know what I know. Because I don't know anything. But if I surrender what knows nothing to that knows everything, I have no idea what I know. But if you ask, we could probably find out.
I love that answer. We're just zooming through the hour here. I've been hanging on to a couple questions for the end, one for the end, one for right now. What do you foresee doing on upcoming shows?
I think that the first show, I would like to take people through the structure of the journey conceptually. If you want to have this connection and relationship with your soul, based on my own journey, now, I know that people can find these answers in many, many different places, but I want to take them through the steps to reach that oneness with their soul and all of creation, because there's different ways to get there. Like, first you want to check out the human self, then you want to make it interactive, then you want to go through your five bodies, then you want to make sure you have connection with other dimensions. Like, there are steps that lead you into this place of oneness. And so in future shows, I would like to teach people. And the first show that I do, I think that's what I'm going to do, is just kind of give an outline of, hey, where are you at in your journey? Maybe you've already transcended humanity and now you would like to do spiritual communication and symbolism and how that works and how your spirit talks to you and how to make it interactive. Maybe you're way past the filter part. Maybe you don't need the filter part. So I want to give an outline in the first, you know, show that I do, so this way I can, people will be able to easily identify where are they at in their journey. What part do they need to focus on? Because then in following shows, they can reference those things. And they can ask questions about those things, which actually then kind of gives everybody a broader education because you don't have to feel like you only have to ask the question that we're talking about today. You know, you can ask, one person can ask about, you know, the honor self phase of growth, and another person can ask about, well, I think my grandma came to me in a dream. So we might be talking about dream interpretation or astral projection, and then we also might be talking about, like, hey, how do you be nice to yourself? So I want to give an outline so people can identify for themselves where are they at in their discovery of enlightenment and growth. And then they'll know what part to kind of focus on in the questions that they have if they call into the show.
All right. Wow, 4 minutes to the top. So I just wanted to ask you about where we started with the guardian angel that you saw as a child, and you said that you have continued to have connections to see her. Is she still with you now, and what messages has she brought to you lately?
Well, here's the thing I discovered about 15 years ago. Is that Francesca is actually my past life self.
Mm.
So my guardian angel, the one who has guided me through my life, that has appeared angelic and beautiful and in the light of God, I always thought that she was other than me. But in my growth and in the different phases that I've gone through, in my own journey, I recognize that Francesca is actually me from a previous life. So she is a piece of my soul. I still connect with her. She's still part of my existence. If I could say that she's the project manager of all of my other past lives, she's the main one. She figured it out in her lifetime. And so she guides me in connection to the work I do here on earth, my relationship with my own spirit, which is a connection to her, and also all of my past life experiences, which integrated together create our soul project and the need to know past lives. You could have 1,000 past lives, but you only need to know a few for this soul project. So later on, I realized and discovered that my main guiding angel is actually my past life self, and her name is Francesca.
Wow. No, I was supposed to ask that. Okay, here's where we're at. 2 minutes to the top. We always do something called shameless self-promotion before we sign off on a show. So whatever you'd like to let people know, we've got a couple minutes to do that now.
Okay. I think I don't even know how to answer that because I feel like I've been kind of sharing a whole bunch about my experience and everything. I think my shameless self-promotion, because my goal is to help you to be friends with your own self and your own spirit, my shameless self-promotion would be find 3 things in your life this week that you can shamelessly self-promote, something beautiful about yourself, some gift that you offer to the human race or to your family or some kind gesture that you did for somebody. Find that in yourself, anybody who's listening. Because I think that in essence, if my goal and my practice is to promote a relationship between you and your own soul, the real goal of that is, like, I'm kind of putting myself out of work because if I teach you how to do that, you don't need me. And That's what it's supposed to be. You shouldn't need me to talk to your own soul, to talk to your mom or your grandma or your baby or whoever is in heaven. So that's my shameless self-promotion. Find a way to self-promote your connection to your own soul and how that works in humanity. Find three of them this week. Share them with me next time.
Beautiful. That's where we shall begin. And Nikki, it was great to get to know you and your story and share airtime with you today. I look forward to the next time already.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me today, and I look forward to connecting with everybody next time. I hope people call in, too, so that we can become an interactive group of friends that share stories, ask questions, because no question is off. Like, any question is great because it always is not just you that's going to receive the answer. So know that your questions are valid and will help me and you and anybody listening.
Beautiful. Until next time, Nikki, all the best, and take care.
Thank you. Thank you, you too. Bye-bye.
All of your awakenings. Nikki will be, this. If you missed any of this hour, it will be archived by tomorrow on newsforthesoul.com. That's where you can find her bio and everything else. And we're back in 2 minutes with the next show. Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Welcome to News for the Soul's 20th Anniversary Broadcast Series. News for the Soul, the longest running spiritual empowerment and exploration broadcast in North America, started its 21st year in January 2018, and we're just getting warmed up. It's time to take it to the next level, exploring the edge of human consciousness and possibility on planet Earth in our 21st year with founder and journalist Nicole Marie Whitney at the helm. What's really real and what's really possible? That is what we want to know. So if you're ready to find out together, get ready for life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Platinum Edition, here is News for the Soul.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
And we're back, still live today for a few more hours, three anyways at least, and right now I have the pleasure of doing one of my favorite things, introducing you to a new member of the News for the Soul family, Scott Moore, The Great Pursuit of Life. We're going to get to know him. His bio is on, I just realized I've got nobody on the board. Okay, stay put, and we'll put a pause button on here and hopefully get Scott connected momentarily. Okay, let's try that again. I'm going to introduce you to a new member of the News for the Soul family right now, Scott Moore, The Great Pursuit of Life begins now. You can find his bio on our website, newsforthesoul.com. Hey, Scott, welcome. How are you? Are you there?
I'm here. Sorry, time is always on time, huh?
It is.
What's going on with connection here? How are you, Nicole?
I'm well. How are you?
Thank you for having me on. I'm really excited to start this part of the journey.
As am I. hopefully your technology holds up there with your connection. Let's give it a go. If you need to reconnect to the board, just let me know if I'm cutting out or if you're having trouble staying connected. But let's get started. And hold the space. So okay. Basically, I like to start with the first question that I ask everybody because it's the place that connects us together as a community and a movement on News for the Soul. So we all have these moments of direct experience with outside, something outside the 3D norm that we were told about when we arrived. Mm-hmm. And I suspect you have some interesting experiences. I'm curious what your first memory as such an experience would be, and also your most profound.
So, yeah, absolutely. So it only happened just a few years ago at a place called The Sanctuary in Sedona. A little bit of background of me, short background, because we all have our stories, right? But it was Sanctuary at Sedona. I was there for 2 months, and it's essentially a holistic rehabilitation center. And I was there for drug and alcohol rehab. I'm also prior military. And it really connected with me. I was this place focuses on, you know, meditation, body work, mind, body, soul, spirit kind of healing, which really aligned with me. I've never really been introduced into to anything like that before. And about 3 weeks, maybe a month into the first stint of the program, I was doing some body work, and the practitioner, I'd never heard of it before, offered to do a timeline regression, right? And I'm like, okay, well, what is this? Let's go for it, right? However I can heal, let's dive in. So we start going back into time, and, you know, it's the first time I've really ever heard of, like, past life experiences, things like that. And it was kind of mind-blowing because, you know, up until that point at the sanctuary, we were practicing meditation every day, and just really, really profound things that started connecting with me really quickly, breath work, things like that. And as we're going through this timeline regression, so strange, but here I am back in, like, the Roman Empire days, and it looks like I'm in, like, a Roman Colosseum, okay? As I'm laying on the table, and she's working on my right side, my right arm, my right shoulder, which I've had 2 surgeries on. I have full sleeve of tattoos. That is, you know, apparently I learned the masculine side of our body, the right. And so she's doing this work, and I'm taken back to this place in the meditative state, a conscious state. And here I am, like, in this Roman Colosseum. And the staff. Be robes, and to my understanding, was Archangel Michael, right? I didn't know who it was, but I asked her after. Yeah, of course that's who it was. And then I later did some research, but so I'm handed the staff, and as soon as I grab it with my right arm, I'm taken away in my subconscious in a meditative state down, like, what looks like a wormhole. It's completely dark, and I'm going through, like, what feels like spirals, as if you were going through, like, a slide or something, like one of those tunnel slides at, you know, a playground. And then at the end, you kind of, like, you know the light coming up, and you can see the light. And in my mind, I'm like, I never reached the light. Why is this different? And then I start slowing down in this dark tunnel, right? All subconsciously while I'm laying there on the table and she's still working on me and facilitating this. And then I'm like, you know what? Like, now is the choice point. Now is the time to decide to get that light. Or subconsciously, I made that decision that I'm going to reach it. I'm coming out on the end of this tunnel. And I did. And as soon as I reached, it was like I was 8,000 feet elevation, soaring as an eagle over what looked like the rolling hills and, like, forest, the Gallatin National Forest in Montana, right? And I'm full green grass, trees, there's a river that I'm following underneath, and I'm enjoying the moment. I feel the wind as like on my feathers. I feel how it's moving me around, how I need to navigate it. All the while, I'm observing everything from this really high perspective. And then it stops, right? And the practitioner who is facilitating this goes, "Oh, my God." And I pop out. I'm back on the bed. I am aware of my entire room that I'm in. I'm aware of her. And there's a bird in this room that's probably 500 square feet. In this, you call it, like, massage room, if you will, the body work room. Physical bird standing there, like on the rafters, looking down at me. And I'm like, oh, that doesn't surprise me, you know? So she goes, okay, you've got to tell me about what happened. And she goes over, she opens the door, the bird flies out, and there's probably 5 or 6, like, steps. It's kind of like a sunken room. And 5 or 6 steps to get up to, like, the main level of, like, where the dirt and path is. And the bird goes up to the second one, stops, and sits there for a few minutes. And I'm the last person to do body work this day, right? So it goes from, I don't know, 11 a.m. or so until about 4 p.m. before dinner. And she has many clients that come through that are all in the sanctuary. And there hasn't been a bird in there all day. And the bird looks at us from the stairs, and it's so peaceful. It's so calm. And she's like, we're done. We're done here. And the bird flies away. So I tell her the story of the receiving the staff and all that, and she goes, I will never forget this experience. Like, neither will I. I'll tell about it one day, I promise.
Wow. How did you find the center in Sedona in the first place?
Kind of how we found each other. Really, really. I didn't seek it. In fact, I went and I'm very nature connected, right? So through some issues, I went and got sober by myself for 2 weeks. I secluded myself to a little cabin on a lake, fishing every day and hiking and just being with myself. And then some circumstances kind of forced me to go to a rehab, if you will. And I was just poking around online trying to decide where I should go, because 12-step is a very linear process that I don't really align with, right? That's how I've been living my life up to this point. And I didn't know what else was out there, but I knew something was. And then I fell asleep with all these tabs open on my computer of rehabilitation facilities that I didn't know where to go. Montana was, you know, an option, Colorado, all in like a holistic fashion, practice, right, for healing. Prior to any of them, and the next morning I get a phone call in this cabin while I'm washing dishes from breakfast, and it's one of the administrators from Sanctuary asking if I had any questions about the center. And I went. Here we are. And through that, actually, I think we have a lot of similar connections we've talked about. So, yeah.
So, I mean, you're saying that you were connected to nature and stuff already before. It sounds like you were going through some challenges, but still on a more conscious path. Is that correct?
I wouldn't say more conscious. Nature has always been an escape for me. Right? I would always escape to nature. As a kid, I would ride my bike 3 miles down to the local canal and try to catch, you know, any kind of fish that would bite my hook. And I would do that by myself and just go, never knowing really why I did it, but to process a lot of things that I couldn't quite understand, right? And ask myself a lot of questions. And now knowing that I look to nature to answer those, but nature's answered it in kind of a subconscious level, not really forefront to my mind. And only until recently have I kind of been able to put that to the forefront and really listen to nature as it provides all the information we need.
Interesting. Did you have any intuitive experiences or esoteric experiences growing up?
No, I wouldn't say intuitive. I've always asked big questions, right? And a conversation I had not too long ago, you know, when you're in school, right, it's what do you want to be when you grow up, right? I always had two answers, a chicken farmer and an astronaut, right?
They're very different.
Right now, I'm bridging the gap of being a chicken farmer and an astronaut with my understandings.
Love that.
Yeah.
So as far as what brought you to that point of needing to go to a rehab in the first place, only share what you feel comfortable, but what was going on? Like what happened to bring you to that point in life?
So after the military, I moved back to Washington and did, you know, it's a thrill, right? Being in the military, you develop a bond and brotherhood with the people you serve with, not because you align with the greater picture, but because you really connect with the people, right? So when I got out, it was like societal rules, right? I had to go get a job. I had to like go back to school. I had to do all these things, like the societal pressures to make me quote unquote successful in my mind. So it's what I did. And I had a really good job working at an aerospace company, and I got injured on my right shoulder doing some manufacturing for a really, really well-known for Boeing, right? Boeing and Airbus. So this was in Washington. I got injured, and then because of my studies in college, after the military, I was put into a position where I ran the Sarbanes-Oxley or SOX program, which is essentially an internal auditor for publicly traded companies. And that company had just been bought out by a publicly traded company, the aerospace company. So I went from working with my hands and like working with the best man at, you know, my wedding and brother in the military, who we basically got out together, and having that connection, to being separated and in a position where I was suit and tie working in an office. And coming from what I did in the military, that wasn't me, right? But the pay was better. It was good. I thought it was what I was supposed to do, but it wasn't. I kind of gave that up on a whim and found fiance at the time. And then moved this all to North Dakota, where I thought I had figured out what was going to make me successful. And that was opening a coffee shop and building it from the ground up, like building my legacy, if you will. But once it was successful, I had no more motivation or drive to continue to do it. So I've always been searching, right? But searching and satisfying myself with material things, right? And my belief of success. And once I reached that bar, I had nothing to strive for, right? So I fell into the escape of, you know, drugs and alcohol and things like that. And, you know, stunting motorcycles and just reckless in all aspects of my life.
Wow.
And that's, you know, I fell down that rabbit hole, and didn't know how to get out. But I've always had grand ideas and didn't know how to incorporate them or never felt understood or validated in them, right?
And yet you started getting out on your own before you went to the sanctuary.
Yeah, I did. It's what I've always done as a child, right? And that goes back to just kind of some family history of quote-unquote mental illness, right? There's history of drug abuse in my family, alcohol abuse. Just really, I wouldn't say dysfunctional by any means, right? Because I chose my parents before I was born, is my belief, and my family, and they're all here to teach a lesson, and I wouldn't have it any other way. But through these experiences, I've grown to where I am today, and for that, I'm so grateful. You know?
So basically your soul was not on purpose and unfulfilled, and then you found the sanctuary. What else happened there?
Yeah. Oh man, let's see. Met some really good people. In fact, a co-host on News for the Soul, Pam, the Joy Hour with Dr. Pam, right? Or I forget how it goes. But
healing
she
hour.
Was there. She was a part of the healing hour. There we go. Get a little plug on that. But it was amazing. I met some amazing people, some really good connections, and people who really believed, right? Like, believed so much that what they were doing was as real as Santa Claus, as when we were kids. And that is motivating, because I didn't know what they were doing, but they trusted everything. There was guidance, and they were helping people. Right? And that was, like, I saw passion in every person there. And it rubbed off on me. And I still didn't really know how to use it when I left the sanctuary. But I knew it was there. It wasn't quite tangible yet, but I understood what it was. And it's what I'm searching for, right? It's the great pursuit of life. You will.
Sorry, I've got a bit of background noise here. Hopefully you can hear me okay. How long were you at the sanctuary? Sorry, you cut out there as well. Did you say a few months?
I was there for 2 months.
2 months, okay. And did you have any other experiences like that, lifeline therapy with the bird?
Yeah, so one of the workers, practitioners, facilitators there at randomly one day decided to do a breathwork session with us, right? And I had come to, actually, I've got another story. I've come to realize, like this is my perspective and my, like, it's my universe. It's how I see things, right? So during the breathwork session, we transmitted signals of communication, like, if you will, telepathically to one another, right? But before, right, it's a malpractice to go into another person's journey if you're able to do that, in my belief. And we communicated it before. I forget what pictures it was, but we talked. I'm like, hey, I'm gonna send you something during this breathwork session. Will you send me something too? And she goes, yeah, absolutely, I will. Like, okay, cool. So I sent her sunset on a beach overlooking the ocean, nothing obstructing the view, right? So if you can imagine the colors, the purples, the blues, the white sand, all of this. And keep in mind, she sent me a dancing horse, I think is what it was. And then after the breathwork ceremonies, regardless of whether this experience, that facilitator of the breathwork encouraged us to draw a picture and maybe some words that really stood ceremony during breathwork, and draw a picture with colors and, you know, crayons on a big, like, stock piece of paper. That way we can remember it, right? We can manifest it on something physical we can see with our two eyes, because that's our deepest intentions, really, right, if that comes up. So back to what we sent each other. So after the breathwork was over, she drew on her paper what looked like a rainbow, the very bottom right corner of the cardstock. I drew a unicorn on the very top left corner of my paper. She thought it was a rainbow, and I thought she sent me a unicorn, right? But when I told her, I'm like, look, perspective, right? I sent you sunset on a beach. She had on a rainbow, like a light yellow on the bottom, and then blue, and then like a purple, orange, and it looked like a beach, but she drew a rainbow. And a dancing unicorn can be related to, or a unicorn can be related to, like, a dancing horse.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, just that connect the emotions and things like that. And we were both blown away. It was hard for us to look at each other, like, the rest of the day, even through dinner.
Well, in a remote session, that would be considered spot on. Absolutely.
Definitely.
No, I mean, how did...
Yeah, and then another...
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
You go.
one more. We were sitting outside at the table for lunch, and it's the sanctuary family, regardless who's there, right? We all eat lunch together. We all have dinner together, and just kind of discuss the day and where we're at, right? It's the practice of being present. And what we're great, we're sitting outside, and we're having lunch together. And, you know, I hunt and I fish, and I'm really well connected with nature. And I'm sitting there, and I'm engaged in conversation with about eight people at the lunch table. We're all just conversing. And then I stop, and I look up to my left, like 200 yards, maybe 250. There's a really big buck, a male deer, just standing at the very tip of the crest or the tip of the hill, and behind is the skyline, right? And I put my attention straight to him without any hesitation. I looked and I pointed it out to the entire table. The founder of the sanctuary got up and walked away. It was so bizarre that he watched me just turn my attention to see this deer looking at us broadside. You can see its entire body and antlers. And I went straight to it, looked, pointed, acknowledged it, showed everybody, and the founder stood up and walked away. We haven't talked about that since, actually.
Wow. So how did these, what did you learn from having these awakening moments?
So there's a tagline that I use, and I'm going to acknowledge this because this question was actually asked on my social media today. And her name is Kelly. I won't say last name just for privacy, but I will answer her question right now. Pay your right. And when you think of the verbiage, like, pay attention. Like, what does that mean? Right? What are you paying, and where is your attention? So, like you would pay anything to receive something, pay your consciousness to what you're noticing. Right? Whether it's external or internal. Because our external is a mere reflection of what we see inside of us that we may not be consciously aware of. So paying your attention is paying consciousness to being attentive, right? All written, it's all in our verbiage, it's all in our words. And that's kind of like the first step to understanding and knowing. So through all of these synchronicities or these moments of aha, right? These aha look for in students' eyes is what I've started to notice because I've started to project them and then they come to fruition.
Mm.
That's kind of what I got from it. That makes sense.
I like that a lot. Well, let's back up a little bit to you're leaving the sanctuary. Where did you go next?
I went and got a job. Went back home with, so I'm recently separated from my ex, but I have twin 5-year-olds. I went back to family life and continued to try to work on a healing center that focuses on, you know, attention to detail, like we're taught in the military, right? Awareness in veterans is abundant, but we don't know what to do with it, right? So we escape. So in the back of my mind, I was trying to manifest this while living the laws again of getting a job, providing for my family, doing the stuff, making the money, you know, having the house, having the cars, having the toys, but realizing that maybe that's what kind of put me in the sanctuary in the first place. Because I'm suppressing this, right? So through the learning experience of trying to relive that life with more knowledge and more understanding, it put me in a really, dark place internally. I've yet, that's a very poor choice of words, to go back to drugs or alcohol, because I will not, right? But I was going into like a depression, just going through the motions. And I realized I was just going through the motions, and I had to kick that, or else I knew where that was going to end up, right? We don't run a linear life. We run cycles. And that cycle was coming right back around to bite me in the behind. And I had to make the choice to change it, or, you know, I'd get to go see my friends at the sanctuary again.
Mm-hmm. So how did you break the cycle?
Sacrifice. I left my job kind of unexpectedly. Everybody, including myself, was really worried, telling me, go get help. Go see a psychiatrist. Go to the VA. They'll help you. Still pushing external, right? Like, go get some help. When people can't heal me, right? Only I can do that. And only I can do that when I'm ready, right? But I knew what I had to do. I had to bask in that feeling of pain. And I did that to the extreme that I know how to do, right? So my ex and I are separated. We're going through a divorce, right? But what's amazing is we are actually really good friends now. And the relationship has evolved into something really beautiful as friends and understanding and actually clear communication too, right? I left my job, just abandoned it, which I've never really done before, right? And that right there made me just feel really bad inside. It was a team-based job. So I left everybody hanging. And subconsciously, I did that so I can feel really bad about myself, right? So if you look at it in the military, like, they break you down before they build you up. I broke myself down so I can rebuild what I know I need to rebuild. Yeah. And then I left for Peru on a one-way ticket with no plans. Don't know Spanish. I had no reservations at any places. Airbnb saved my life, I'll tell you.
Wow.
And I thought I had to make a plan to go there, right? In this very linear kind of chronological fashion that I've been living. But that was quickly put in its place. The two plans I made were obviously my plane tickets out there, right? And then I made a plan to get on the train to go to Machu Picchu. I missed my flight, and I missed my train. Stopped making plans and followed the universal guidance. And that kind of led me to you and the show, to be honest.
Wow. I love the full-on commitment to, you know, but this is why we have these first interviews, because people assume that the people talking on the network have all been like rainbows and unicorns and fluffy clouds. And, you know, a lot of it is a real deep, dark pathway. And, you know, how we maneuver through it and what we learn is what's key. Because so many people, even listening now, could be in that place and knowing.
It's all a lesson.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you can't live the light if you don't know the darkness. Otherwise, the light becomes dark, right? Because it's what you look for. So it's also duality, and everything's a lesson. If you smash your finger in the car door, you're probably going to be more aware and pay your attention to that door closing and where your hand is. And there's lessons like that in every second of the day. And that's kind of paying your attention, too. Right?
I'm wondering,
understanding what you're learning.
What did it take you to make that decision to get on that plane one way? What was that whole process like?
Validation. So I believe that we all seek understanding and validation, right? And I wasn't going to do it. prior to going on that plane, I spent roughly, 2 months living in a cabin.